I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. Last fall, the Board of Trustees of Penn State University asked former FBI Director Louis Freed to conduct an investigation into how Penn State handled the criminal charges against former university assistant football coach Jerry Sandusky, who was accused then of child sexual abuse. Last month, Sandusky was convicted of multiple counts of sexual assault involving 10 boys after an emotional and high-profile trial. Yesterday, Freed released his report, and he didn't mince words.
Our most saddening and sobering finding is the total disregard for the safety and welfare of Sandusky's child victims by the most senior leaders at Penn State. The most powerful men at Penn State failed to take any steps for 14 years to protect the children who Sandusky victimized. Mr. Spanier, Schultz, Paterno, and Curley never demonstrated, through actions or words, any concern for the safety and well-being of Sandusky's victims until after Sandusky's arrest.
Free also criticized the football culture at Penn State and the trustees for their passivity. It's our topic for today's Radio Times. And we begin with Jeff Brady. He's national desk reporter who's been covering the story for NPR, joins us from NPR. And Jeff, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. I'm listening to Louis Free's voice there. You were at the news conference yesterday in Philadelphia. What was the atmosphere like?
You know, a lot of people have been waiting a long time for this, 8 months of investigation. And, you know, Judge Free was given a lot of independence by the Board of Trustees when he was hired. And it was clear as he was presenting that report that he took full advantage of that independence. His team interviewed more than 430 people. They started just right around Thanksgiving last year and ended just about a week ago. The last interview was conducted. And the report was very critical, just scathing. And he made the points over and over again that here were four leaders who acted in a really bad way.
Well, indeed. And he talks in the report, talks about really failures at all levels of the university, from the board, the most powerful men, as he described them, including questions about janitors who were afraid to report because they were afraid of their jobs. And this culture of football at the university as well, it seems he covered the whole gamut.
Yeah, and for that culture, he really laid the blame at the very people who hired him to conduct this investigation, the Board of Trustees. He said that culture issue was a big one, and it was those interviews with janitors that convinced him of that. He talked about this one janitor in 2000 saying he saw Jerry Sandusky molesting a boy in a shower, told some of the other janitors. The janitor sat down and considered that, and decided not to do anything because they were afraid that they would lose their jobs. They actually talked among themselves and said, there's no way we can go up against this football program. Nobody would believe us. The university wouldn't back us, so we don't have any choice.
And so Louis Freed laid that at the feet of the Board of Trustees for, tolerating an atmosphere where janitors would fear for their job.
Yeah, and he said, you know, if that's the culture at the bottom of the organization, then God help the culture at the top of the organization. He really didn't pull any punches when, as I said, talking about the very people who hired him to do this job. So I think the key word here is independence. He fully exercised his independence.
There was a grand jury investigation into Jerry Sandusky, and looking at that investigation and also looking at Louis Free's report yesterday, what was the major revelation, you think, that came out of the Free report?
I think the major revelation was about Joe Paterno. Judge Free made this point over and over again that Joe Paterno did not act alone, but Joe Paterno's name is the one that most people recognize among those four men, and it looks really clear. There's a fair amount of evidence there that suggests that he knew what was going on. He followed developments closely, and still it looks like he probably followed the letter of the law, at least in one of those cases, and reported it to his supervisor. But considering his position in the community, probably should have taken this further and taken a stand and said, there's something wrong here. There's something that's bad and needs to be fixed, and I'm going to make sure as a leader in this community that I'm going to be the one to do it.
And Joe Paterno did express regret that he didn't do more, but Louis Freeh seems to, or does say, that if Joe Paterno had done more, some of this abuse probably would have been stopped.
Of course. I mean, those janitors were afraid that they wouldn't be listened to. But when Joe Paterno spoke, people listened. So if he had said something, people would have listened. Of course, now his family says he would have never knowingly protected a child predator. And maybe this is more about misunderstanding what the situation was. Mm-hmm. But look at Judge Freeh's report, and it seems like Paterno knew exactly what the mm-hmm. situation was.
In fact, a key incident goes back to 1998 when a boy is showering with Sandusky, actually goes and tells his mother, and there is an investigation. The university gets involved. And this was an incident that seemed to be denied, at least Joe Paterno and others denied that they knew about it.
Right. And even said to the Washington Post in those recorded interviews that a lot of us saw that what we saw in Freeh's report yesterday completely contradicts that. He did know that there was something going on in 1998. And Judge Freeh said yesterday that it stunned him that no one ever even confronted Sandusky about this directly. I mean, the man had an office right down the hall from Joe Paterno, and he never went in there and confronted him directly.
And Louis Freeh and his team were able to get, I guess, emails and notes and conducted multiple interviews. And it seems that these emails and notes were pretty incriminating.
They were. It's Judge Freeh. I you know, when I listen to a press conference, I'm listening for that little nugget of tape that's going to tell you what the larger story is. And there were so he said it over and over again. These men didn't act, and they allowed this predator to continue to exist in their midst. They did nothing. He said, there was one soundbite here. He said, in short, nothing was done and Sandusky was allowed to continue with impunity. Heard that over and over from Judge Freeh.
There was also a horrifying incident in 2001. Mike McQueary sees a boy being sexually assaulted by Sandusky in a shower. He does go to Paterno, and there's been some question back and forth about what was said and what Paterno told others. Does the Louis Freeh report shed any more light on that particular incident?
Well, you know, I keep coming back to the same point here, yeah. But every single incident, the Judge Freeh says it's clear. The evidence all points to this one direction. These four men knew exactly what was going on. And it wasn't that they just were apathetic and didn't do anything. It was that they actually discussed this among themselves and then decided, we're not going to do anything. The fear of bad publicity was so strong that they actually decided they weren't going to do anything. And that, just think about that for a minute and what these victims went through and then deciding, actually purposely deciding not to do anything. That's quite damning.
Did Louis Freeh use the word cover up?
You know, he it wasn't like straight, like, you know, they actually went around and sort of like were, you know, shoveling dirt over evidence. It was more that they didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. And because they didn't do anything, this was allowed to go on. And victims suffered because they didn't do anything. And, you know, when you think of people who are leaders, it's not just about all the good things that you do. It's about how you act in bad times, when bad things are happening. And here, he says, they completely failed.
And even in this particular incident, the 2001 incident, where Mike McQueary sees the boy being sexually assaulted by Sandusky, nobody goes to find out who this boy is. He's
we
never
still don't know.
We don't know.
Yeah, we still don't know. It's stunning to think all the different times that there were indications that something was going on. But I think that really speaks to, again, the culture at Penn State, which Judge Free pointed to repeatedly. And that is what allowed this to go on. And that's why he lays ultimate blame at the Board of Trustees and says, you need to change this culture.
And has there been a response? I've heard some interviews from some individual members of the Board of Trustees. Sounds like the ball is in their court to do something next. What did Free, in a sense, tell them to do or recommend?
Right. He has issued 119 recommendations. That's a lot of recommendations. And so now they're going to be plowing through that. I don't expect that they're going to accept all of them necessarily. But yesterday, Karen Peets, she's the chair of the Board of Trustees, she said, these recommendations are going to be our North Star now as we kind of guide ourselves through this process and consider what we're going to do next. It's hard to say what that process is going to be like. Karen Peets seems like someone who is a strong person, who is definitely committed to restoring the reputation of the university and the football program. I think we have to wait and see, because there's good reason to be skeptical at this point.
Well, and Free talks about the football culture at Penn State as a kind of island.
Yeah, and boy, when you have something that's so successful and so revered, you can see how that island develops. Rod Erickson, I think he's the current president of Penn State. I've listened to him talk quite a lot about this, and it sounds to me like he understands that that's a problem. He still, you know, has his own reverence for the football program. But I think there are going to be some walls broken down there, and there's going to be a lot more oversight of this program going forward.
I'm assuming you spent a fair amount of time in Penn State covering this story?
Yep. State College has been a second home over the last 8 months.
And what's been the response? Maybe it's too soon to tell. Has there been a response from the campus itself to the Free report?
Yeah, you know, I really have noticed a change in that community over that time. I was there during when the scandal was becoming widely known, and the night that Joe Paterno was fired, I got caught up in that ruckus that occurred downtown. I actually have still some damage to my car from students crawling all over my car. Unfortunately, I was cowered in the back seat of the car while they were screaming F the media because they were upset of the reporting that led to Joe Paterno's firing. And it wasn't just the reporting, obviously. But right. But since then, obviously, tempers have calmed quite a bit. And yesterday, I heard some reactions from folks in State College, and it was less about this should not have been done to Joe Paterno and more about kind of a sad, I am sorry that my college, the college that I love, is going through this right now. I think there's still a sense that Joe Paterno is the legendary coach and he'll always be that. But as a leader, he's taken a real hit here, and people are preferring now to focus on the university.
Well, Jeff Brady, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times, getting us started in this tragic story. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. He's National Desk Reporter for NPR. Joined us from NPR. We will continue our conversation. We have two guests waiting in the wings and lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Pico Pops at the Man presents Chris Botti in concert with the Philadelphia Orchestra Thursday evening, July 19th. As a jazz instrumental artist, Botti's success has crossed over to audiences usually reserved for pop music, and his ongoing association with PBS has led to 4 number one jazz albums and multiple gold, platinum, and Grammy awards. Tickets are available at mancenter.org or 215-893-1999. The Man supports WHYY.
As a piano player, Robert Glasper draws from both jazz and hip-hop. Even at the age of 14, he was listening to Keith Jarrett, A Tribe Called Quest, and Bonnie Raitt.
My mixtapes are very random. My friends would get in my car and be like, huh? They'd be like nodding to The Tribe Called Quest, but you keep riding, and in about 10 minutes,
turn down the lights.
My interview with Robert Glasper on Bullseye from PRI.
tonight at 9 on WHYY.
D.C. Mayor Vincent Gray is the latest politician to get into hot water. But is Gray under scrutiny because he's corrupt or because he's African-American?
Black elected officials during the post-civil rights period are disproportionately investigated.
Author Derek Musgrove on his new book, Rumor, Repression, and Racial Politics. That's next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. In June, former Penn State football defensive coordinator Jerry Sandusky was convicted on 45 counts of child sexual abuse involving 10 boys. Yesterday, former FBI Director Louis Freeh released the results of an investigation into how this could have happened, and the report is scathing. Joining us now is Bill Mushi, and he is the co-author of a book called Game Over, Jerry Sandusky, Penn State and the Culture of Silence. He's a Pulitzer Prize-nominated investigative journalist, specializes in documenting abuses of the criminal justice system. And Bill Mushi, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
So nice to be here. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And Jeff Franz joins us as well. He's an enterprise reporter for the Harrisburg Patriot News. He contributed to the paper's Pulitzer Prize-winning coverage of the Sandusky scandal. He is also, by the way, a 2004 Penn State graduate. He covered Joe Paterno and the Nittany Lions. And Jeff Franz, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Nice to have you here. And Jeff, let me begin with you, only because you have been you and your paper have been covering this story for more than a year now. Did you learn anything new from yesterday's report from Louis Freeh?
Oh, we learned lots new. And I think some of it was confirmation of things that people have either suspected or have leaked out in the past couple of weeks, such as some of what Joe Paterno and Graham Spanier knew and when they knew it. But some of it was very new. You know, that Joe Paterno knew about the 1998 incident. That was key. To the extent that which Spanier ran the board, I mean, we had heard kind of rumors of that and things, but to have it laid out in such a way and how much the board had kind of abdicated their responsibilities.
And that was
that
new.
That was new.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was... It was known and suspected, but it was not had not been laid out that starkly, you know, previously.
And
so,
let me pick up on that, but let me get you in on the conversation as well, Bill, as a co-author of a book that came out just a couple of months ago about this whole scandal. Revelations for you?
Oh yeah! First of all, congratulations to Jeff and the entire Patriot News team on the well-deserved Pulitzer Prize.
Indeed,
did my heart great. Made me feel real good to see you guys use great journalism to achieve great rewards. Congratulations!
Oh, thanks.
But there were numerous new things. But the bottom line is contrary to the attacks that the Paterno family have leveled at people like us and other media over the last several months, the Freeh investigation laid the 98 investigation right in Joe Paterno's lap, and then the constant, which we heard a lot when we were doing the reporting on this book, and I'm sure Jeff did too, but the constant mentions by Mr. Freeh that there was a callous disregard for these young kids throughout this whole sordid affair.
Well, and I think this report, having read it yesterday, just sort of underscores the fact that we've got 10 victims, and they're now adults, but they were boys at the time, and you've got these, as Louis Freeh says, four powerful members of Penn State University who did nothing to stop this abuse. Bill?
Well, that's a very disheartening thing. We all hope that our moral compasses might lead in a different direction than that. But that goes to the whole closed society that Penn State is. I've covered Penn State off and on for many years, and not on the sports side, but on the education side. And they were an impenetrable wall. They fought the Harrisburg Patriot News all the way to the Supreme Court to keep Joe Paterno's salary quiet. Graham Spanier himself appeared repeatedly before legislative committees to keep them out of the Pennsylvania Right to Know Act. That, you know, the insularity between those two mountains caused a lot of things to happen in this whole scenario, and it shows that it wasn't the outside forces that brought all this on them. It was a rotting from within.
What do you think, Jeff?
No, I think Bill raises a very good point there. You know, when you look at the insularity, when you look at, you know, there's a passage in Louis Freeh's report when he discusses an over-reliance on the Penn State way. And I think that's definitely true. The right-to-know law exemptions they fought so hard for are another example. If you look at what if you look at Louis Freeh's recommendations for the Board of Trustees, there were things that are so simple as to almost be insulting. It's basically, you should ask tough questions. Mm. You should have a university email address. You should read the tax returns. You know, you should have more board members who are not directly associated with the university, who didn't come up through this, you know, insular culture. You know, that's something, if you look back, there's a lot of instances where you had people progress from long-time academic positions to then they wind up on the board, or you've got people moving back and forth, people who, you know, stayed for 30-some years. So yeah, you definitely have a lot of that, and those are the things going forward that's going to be kind of the question: how can that stuff get broken down or changed?
And I do want to pick up on that, and I do want to talk more about Graham Spanier. But let me play something from Joe Paterno's last interview. He died in January, and he spoke to the Washington Post, Sally Jenkins. And this is Jerry talking about the scandal. Excuse me, saying it's not a football scandal. Let's listen to Joe Paterno.
I'm not interested in getting in the negative part of it. I want to make sure this university understands we still have a future, mm-hmm. and I want everybody to understand that this is not a football scandal.
What he's saying there is this is not a football scandal, and I don't think we can lay all the blame on Joe Paterno, but certainly he has enjoyed hero status for so many years. Jeff, going back to you, to your reporting and your reading of the Louis Freeh report, how should we understand Joe Paterno now?
Oh, well, I think we certainly have to view him as a conflicted man, a flawed man. I think if you look at it, there's real, you know, you kind of have to scratch your head when you hear things like, oh, well, maybe he just didn't fully understand, or maybe he didn't fully comprehend what was happening. You know, he still, you know, would have encountered Jerry Sandusky in the football building after the 1998 incident. And then after the 2001 incident, well, both of which he knew about, he did nothing to stop Jerry Sandusky from getting... one of the things that we learned yesterday in the report was that Jerry Sandusky wasn't qualified to receive Professor Emeritus status. He was just considered an assistant professor. Professor Emeritus status means you get access to an office and other perks, essentially for life. Joe Paterno did nothing to try to stop that from being honored. He continued to praise the Second Mile, this charity that Jerry Sandusky founded that prosecutors have continually called a victim factory. So, you know, in the late years of his life, regardless of what he might have done as a younger man or to promote the university, Joe Paterno did nothing to stop any of that.
No, that's okay. I'm sorry here. Bill, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, Sally Jenkins, who did that interview you just played, called Joe Paterno a liar in her column yesterday and just vilified him throughout the column. She felt betrayed and used. And, he does have a tremendous legacy, but Jesus, nobody's risen to such great heights and fallen so quickly since the last Shakespearean play.
Is that how you see it?
The idea that, you know, Joe Paterno did not admit his involvement is one thing, but the idea that he could have stopped this in 1998 and then again in 2001, basically leaves a long list of young men is basically roadkill. And Mr. Free hit on that over and over again in his report yesterday. And he also hit over and over again on the notion that Joe Paterno had inordinate, if not all-encompassing power on that campus. So when you add all of the knowledge that he might have had to that, it definitely damages his legacy.
Let me reintroduce the two of you. We've got callers that want to join our conversation. That's Bill Mushi, co-author of a book that came out in April called Game Over, Jerry Sandusky, Penn State, and the Culture of Silence. Also with us is Jeff Franz, and he's an enterprise reporter for the Harrisburg Patriot News. He contributed to the paper's Pulitzer Prize-winning coverage of the Sandusky scandal, won the Pulitzer Prize this year. He happens to be a Penn State graduate, covered Joe Paterno and the Nittany Lions, graduated in 2004. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY, dissecting and then digesting the Louis Free report that came out yesterday. Let's see what Tina from Chad's Ford has to say. And Tina, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hello.
Hi.
With due deference to Free and the Pulitzer Prize-winning reporters and writers and all, Paterno's job was the integrity of the football program. Having dismissed Sandusky in 98, put responsibility squarely on the shoulders of the board, Sandusky's charity, his wife, and the schools that kept placating Sandusky's demands. Paterno was a football coach, not a pope. Penn State's a secular university, not a sectarian institution. Making Paterno the goat for everybody else's sins now only proves his fears about misplaced retribution were well-founded.
Well, Tina, I know you speak for others that have that same kind of passion and that same point of view, but let me give Bill Mushi a chance to respond. Is Joe Paterno, should he be, in a sense, forgiven because of what Tina said?
I'm not in the forgiveness business, and I understand the intense loyalty that people have up there during the process of interviewing over 100 people for this book, and I'm sure Jeff interviewed more than that during the course of his work. I found a very intense dislike of me, of the media, and frankly, they wanted us all to go away. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, Joe Paterno, according to the Free Report, which, by the way, a lot of the people in Happy Valley dispute already, Joe Paterno had direct knowledge of a case of child sexual abuse in 98 and again in 2001. And what came out in this 2001 report yesterday was that Joe was the person who insisted that the university not contact the Department of Public Welfare over it. That's what the facts of the Free Report is say. And, I know that the Paterno family has said that that is not a full recounting because a bunch of folks did not cooperate with the Free Commission. But, the facts are what they are, and people's feelings are what they are, and I don't think me, Jeff, or you are going to change anybody's mind on that.
Tina, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Jeff, let me ask you about something that I have to say we were talking about this morning at Radio Times, which is in 1999, after that first incident in 1998, Jerry Sandusky essentially is retired from the football program. He's given this emeritus status. He's given a fairly generous amount of money. He's given access to the facilities there. What was at the bottom of this very generous package given to Jerry Sandusky? Do you know?
Well, as in terms of was it a bribe of some kind?
Well, I don't know
that necessarily, but it certainly was. He was quite well rewarded, and I think looking back with what we know now, I think the thing even beyond he was paid $168,000. But I think the bigger thing is if you look at the agreement with the university to work collaboratively with the Sandusky and the Second Mile. So here you have, the university officials, including Graham Spanier, mm-hmm. who are signing off on this, according to the Free Report. knew that Sandusky had been caught in a shower with a young boy. And they're signing off on him using Penn State University to continue to promote the charity that allows him to have interactions with young boys. Soon after he retired, Penn State sold a parcel of land to the Second Mile at a pretty good deal. I'm the one that happened. Gary Schultz, then vice president, now facing perjury charges, he put out a press release lauding Sandusky as a great man as part of, you know, in detailing this sale. So it's not quite clear, you know, from the Freeport, why exactly they did this, why they were so concerned about making sure that Sandusky was honored in such a way, especially because Joe Paterno certainly valued Jerry Sandusky as a defensive coordinator, but they were not chummy friends from all accounts. They were not. They were different type of guys. Joe always found Sandusky to be kind of this goofy, weird guy, and not his, you know, Joe liked to have some bourbon and, you know, joke, and it just was not. So it's odd in that relationship as well.
Well, Bill, I'm looking at actually a note that was written by Penn State Senior Vice President Gary Schultz in 1998. This is the note about Jerry Sandusky and this report of him showering with this child. The note, and it's a handwritten note, says, "Is this opening of Pandora's box? ? Other children? ? And this was a note written in 1998.
Yeah, and, you know, if you look at any studies on child sex predators, they don't start when they're 55 years old. And, you know, those words on that piece of paper are troubling enough related to the 1998 event, but when you combine them with the 2001 event and the fact that basically Schultz was Sandusky's apologist throughout that whole process and didn't put his foot down. And then the idea that after 2001, they paid Sandusky something like 50 times to do various things on behalf of the university. They had him speak to the graduates of the School of Education. He was connected at the hip after people on that campus, and during the book process, we identified, I think, 17 people who had knowledge of or at least heard of the allegations against this guy over 14 years. And, you know, it's just amazing to me. Mike McQuarrie played in a flag football game coached by Sandusky. He repeatedly went to Sandusky's Second Mile golf outings. I don't get it. I mean, I just don't get that at all. And I think that goes back to this whole insularity and how they basically felt like they could control everything, from the janitor who said he thought he was going to be, like, attacking the president if he reported Sandusky, and what would happen with Paterno, and to all the way up through Spanier and Schultz and Curley. They all had all kinds of opportunities over 14 years, and the fact of the matter is they almost succeeded in covering this up forever. If Sandusky doesn't go up the road to Central Mountain High School 50 miles or so away, that might never have been uncovered, because they zipped them up pretty tightly every time, the two times that things came in.
Well, you know, and, Bill, hold on to that thought, only because we're up on a break here. We'll be back after this very short break. Stay with us.
The MBA program at the University of Delaware's Alfred Lerner College of Business and Economics supports WHYY, now accepting applications for the fall semester. Their next drop-in information session will be held Wednesday, July 18th, 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. at UD's Newark campus. Admission staff will be available to speak one-on-one about their AACSB internationally accredited full-time or part-time MBA program. Scholarships available for qualified candidates. More at 302-831-1200 or udgradbiz.com.
Yo, I've been out there all night slinging crystal. You think it's cake moving a pound of meth 1/10 at a time?
That's Aaron Paul as Jesse Pinkman, a former failing student turned drug dealer on Breaking Bad. The AMC drama starts a new season Sunday. On the next Fresh Air, an interview about Breaking Bad with Aaron Paul. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. The wolf population in Montana is growing, and a state plan to start using traps to thin the packs is drawing critics and supporters. Also, not getting the mileage you hoped for, well, a new lawsuit claims that carmaker Hyundai is using misleading fuel economy claims on its ads. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane, and we're talking about Louis Freeh's report yesterday, a scathing report about how Penn State handled Jerry Sandusky and the sexual abuse of children. Talking with Bill Mushi, co-author of Game Over, Jerry Sandusky, Penn State, and the Culture of Silence, and Jeff Franz. He's an enterprise reporter for the Harrisburg Patriot News, part of a team of reporters who were responsible for the Pulitzer Prize that they won earlier this year about the Sandusky scandal. We do have a full bank of calls here, but Bill, I want to just give you a chance to finish the thing that you were saying right before our break about, I guess, the case that broke this whole thing open.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't until this assault pattern emerged 50 miles up the road that this whole thing broke open. And so a lot of people I talked to, there's investigations into their institutional control, and people have said that institutional control was very good because they almost got away with it.
All right, let me get, looks like Mitchell from Philadelphia to join our conversation. Mitchell, Hello. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hello. Hi. Hi there, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. I guess one of the things I'm hearing this, the Sandusky Paterno Penn State, we just talked recently, Lynn and Bevilacqua and the Archdiocese. 2 years ago, it was Cash for Kids with judges. I mean, there's certainly the problem of these flawed people. They certainly deserve to bear responsibility for their actions. But the problem, I think, is much larger than that. It's a function of what we have as a society or culture now that we value prestige, power, or money way over what we value people. I mean, we can punish these people. We can lock them up. Whatever, strip them of their title or whatever. But I guess my thinking is, as long as, as long as we refuse to deal with the ideas that are kind of going on in the definition of value, new people will come along, replace them, and whatever same, distorting or warping force will come along to and kind of drive them in the same, they'll end up new people doing the same things as the old people. I mean, we're talking about people and events, and I feel that at some point we need to really be kind of focusing on the ideas.
Sure. And the system that promotes those ideas. Mitchell, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Jeff, I'd love to have you weigh in on that. And just to add that Louis Freeh did give, as you said, the Board of Trustees at Penn State a list of more than 100 things to do. Part of that, obviously, addressing a culture at the university.
Yeah, he did, and that's going to be the real interesting thing to see going forward. How does Penn State change that kind of set of ideas and values? Because there are a lot of people, there are a lot of alumni who are even those who are not, especially at this moment, fierce defenders of Joe Paterno, who are saying, "Wait a minute, this was a distinct football problem, but at the same time, we can still have a football team."
Mm-hmm.
And I think the point your caller raises there about, values and how do we assign power and things like that, what happened at Penn State was unique in the way people decided to make, if Louis Freeh report is to believe, frankly, evil choices. But at the same time, it's not unique in that a football coach or a football program had that much power on a major university. And will Penn State, how can Penn State go about still having a football program that means a lot to its alumni, but at the same time, and its students, but at the same time, have that football program have a proper place within the university structure.
Bill, I'd be curious what you say to that, then we'll get back to our callers.
Well, I mean, the war of ideas didn't succeed in this whole situation. It became a defense of against bad publicity, and when you let something as innocuous as bad publicity cause you to make bad moral decisions, that shows a deep rooted problem. And Mr. Free gave them 100 things they can do, and like Jeff said, a lot of them were so ridiculously common sense that it was hard to believe that somebody wouldn't have had that going already. And so they've got a lot of work to do. And, you know, Spanier and Cynthia Baldwin, who was chief counsel, former Supreme Court, state Supreme Court justice, the Free Report documents all kinds of things that they were doing to basically try to deceive that board. And then the board acted like they were a rubber stamp. No one questioned anything. In fact, after the Harrisburg Patriot reported the fact that Sandusky was under investigation, they didn't bring anything to the board for months.
Well, let me just pick up on that because, and we haven't spent a lot of time, Jeff, talking about Graham Spanier, the former president of Penn State, but reading the report, Louis Free is highly critical about what he did and did not do.
Yes, he is. And I spoke to former Attorney General Walter Cohen yesterday, and he fully expects Graham Spanier to be charged with lying to the investigative grand jury. But he also laid out something very interesting, and he said, if you look at the way Louis Free doesn't, in his report, does not say that Graham Spanier necessarily did something criminal. But he said, if you look at the way Louis Free laid out his report, he did it in such a way that could suggest to prosecutors a way that they could charge Graham Spanier with not necessarily just a failure to report, which is what Tim Curley and Gary Schultz are currently charged with. And failure to report is a misdemeanor that carries a penalty of about as harsh as a speeding ticket. But instead, with child endangerment, because you can say, look, there's a pattern here. They, you know, failed to stop Sandusky in 98, failed to stop in 2001. Because they knew of both incidents, it does not matter, this is in Walter Cohen's opinion, it does not matter that then DA Ray Grecar did not press charges after the 98 incident. You know, he says it's a similar legal strategy to what was used in the Monsignor Lynn prosecution. Mm-hmm. And that you could wind up, that Spanier could wind up facing the more serious felony charges of child endangerment, and so eventually could Curley and Schultz if they if the Attorney General decides to go that route. And you mentioned Cynthia Baldwin. The interesting thing in here is...
Who's Cynthia Baldwin?
Okay, yes. Cynthia Baldwin is a former Pennsylvania Supreme Court justice. She was a member of the Board of Trustees at Penn State, was then the university's general counsel when a lot of this stuff was going on. In both 2001 and... That's incorrect, 2001. But later on, as the investigations really got going and the grand jury got going. And she was, at times, had said she was representing the university, Tim Curley, Gary Schultz, and Graham Spanier. Wow. You know, first-year law students can tell you there are, you can't do that. There are all sorts of complications. She was allowed in the grand jury room during the grand jury hearings, saying she was representing these men. She then later said, no, I was actually representing the university. That could really mess up the prosecutions. And, again, talking to Walter Cohen, he said, if you read this report, I mean, she could get disbarred eventually, potentially, but there couldn't be criminal charges brought against her. It would be very difficult with what we know now.
The other thing is that no one even sought a grant of immunity for right. Curley, Schultz, and Spanier, which all the lawyers I talked to say is like also law school 101. You don't, if you're the target of a grand jury, you don't go in there and implicate yourself.
Let me get back to our callers, and we've got, looks like Debbie from Abington joining our conversation. Debbie, go ahead, your radio times.
Hi, everyone.
Hi.
I've been listening to this story for since it broke, and I've been trying to figure out what in the world could these men have been thinking as human beings. And in doing so, I've been trying to not find an excuse for them, but looking for some sort of explanation of how they ignored this. And the only thing that keeps coming back to me is the possibility that, is it possible that they had no idea what they were dealing with, that we're looking at this through our 2012 eyes, where we've all been through the Catholic Church scandals, and we all know a lot more about pedophilia now than anybody did 15 years ago. And is that a possibility at all, that maybe they just didn't quite get it?
Well, Debbie, this would be speculation. I mean, certainly the duty to report those kinds of laws have been around a long time. And while there's a renewed focus on this issue meaning the sexual abuse of children, has not been an invisible topic. But Bill, does that in any way, do you think, explain their inaction?
No. In fact, if you look closely at the Free report, they knew way back that the law forced them to report, they didn't do it. And then, in fact, they had, according to the email that got released yesterday, they were having email discussion frankly, where they brought Joe Paterno's name in. And according to the Free report, Paterno was the one that said, don't report it to the Department of Public Welfare. Joe was uncomfortable with that, and according to a Curley email. And so it wasn't like, I mean, Joe Paterno, when you read the clip words of his grand jury testimony, he does remind you of your old grandfather, who, when you start talking about, the sex acts that Sandusky was accused of, I mean, I can see him pulling back from that. But when you look at the context through the Free report and all the people we interviewed in this book, I mean, he knew exactly what his obligations were, and he made an overt move to not report this stuff, to keep these guys from reporting these allegations to the Department of Public Welfare, which would have changed the whole process of this stuff.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Follow up on that point real quick. You know, the idea that, oh, well, this is a much different time. By 1998, we're not talking in the 1950s here. By that point, the Roman Catholic Church child sex abuse scandal had been going on. You know, and this is just a cursory Google search I did while Bill was answering there, so I don't want to verify this for sure, but estimated that they're paying by the mid-90s, $500 million in jury awards and settlements to various victims.
This is
something. Yes, the church. So that was something, and it was news. That wasn't this. This is something that had come up in public consciousness and had certainly, it was something that I don't think there was certainly the level of awareness that there is today or a year and a half ago. But having said that, it was not the position these men were in, especially Graham Spanier, Gary Schultz. They should have known. They did know it was they were doing.
Let me get Jim from Morrisville to join us on Radio Times. Jim, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning, everybody. How are you today?
Pretty good. How about you?
Good. I kind of a little different look on what's going on here with Penn State. I don't want this to sound like it's let's refocus on me kind of thing, but I'm a Penn State graduate, 1991. I'm an engineering graduate. I have my own business, and long before the trial or the conviction or any of this, just when this came to light, I was receiving fallout from customers or potential customers, like almost as if I had some kind of involvement in this, just because of I'm a Penn State graduate, like I'm guilty by association. Now it may be in jest, but it's like in a way, all this is so damaging to the huge Penn State global empire of which I'm a part of. I'm a graduate, and you know, prior to this all happening, you know, I was very proud, and Penn State engineer people were impressed. Now, in some cases, I find I'm getting just the opposite. People are like kind of balking at it, like, "Oh, you're at Penn State," you know, and it's like they have just destroyed or affected the lives of millions and millions of people because there's so many Penn State graduates out there.
And Jim, I appreciate the call. I think it's a very poignant call, and I'm looking at the clock here. We only have about a minute, and I do want to give Jeff, who's also a Penn State graduate, a chance to respond to your call. Jeff, do you share some of Jim's, as he says, guilt by association?
Well, and I got a text from a friend of mine yesterday just saying, you know, this will never be the same in our lifetimes. It will never go away. You know, I know for me personally, you know, again, this is not in any way about me. Sure. I have my experiences of being at Penn State. I learned a lot of things. I met a lot of great people that have nothing to do with this. At the same time, the image of my university, of where I went, and how that is presented when I say to people, I'm a 2004 Penn State graduate, I almost always expect there will be a punchline attached to it. And I think the way some Penn State graduates responded after when this initially first came out in a kind of a very defense saying this is in no way a Penn State scandal, I think that affects the way people around the country perceive Penn State and will perceive it going forward.
Well, I wish we could talk some more, but I appreciate both of you joining us today on Radio Times. So Jeff Franz, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And congratulations once again on that Pulitzer Prize. He's an enterprise reporter for the Harrisburg Patriot News. The newspaper did win a Pulitzer Prize for its coverage of the Sandusky scandal. Bill Mushi, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you for having me at any time.
You're very welcome. And the book is called, he's co-authored the book. It's called Game Over, Jerry Sandusky, Penn State, and the Culture of Silence. We began our conversation with Jeff Brady, NPR National Desk reporter. He joined us from the Bureau of NPR down in Washington and has been covering this story for National Public Radio. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes and you can find out much more about this program. Good chance we're having this conversation on Facebook. Hope you can join us. Do stay with us for the second hour of Radio Times. We'll be right back.